Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Our VIP diver this week is Icarus Walks, Epic High fan site. Thank you very much. Much love from Tableau.
You are listening to the Tableau Podcast.
Welcome back to the Tableau Podcast. Thanks for listening, by the way. I know you don't have to. You know, it's a pretty big time commitment to be listening to someone every week for like 50 minutes to an hour. You know, that's a lot of time to give me. So thanks for that. All right, guys. So a lot of people on our Discord, on our, you know, on my socials, on the Tableau Podcast socials, and also by texting me at 213-444-5416. A lot of people wanted me to talk about writing. Like the writing process, creative writing, just writing your thoughts. Because if you don't know, I am a writer.
And like different formats too.
Yeah, I've written a collection of short stories. I've written a screenplay that no one has seen. I have written a play that no one has seen because it didn't get put on.
Yeah.
This was during college. I also wrote a lot of poetry before I got into music. And then I write raps. I'm a rapper now. So my entire life has been about writing in one way or another. And it's perfect that Diane, my producer, is here because she's also a writer. Like she…
Believe it or not.
You studied dramatic writing, right?
No, well…
TV
no.
writing.
Yeah, so my concentration was in TV writing and producing.
Okay, let's get to that. Let's get to that.
Not the West Elm.
Oh, I got coffee all over the rug.
The West Elm.
Where are you going? We're going
to clean it?
No, Suen, it's all good. Don't edit any of this out because this is awesome. For the first time, you guys have seen Suen. Look how responsible this guy is.
You and I didn't even feign.
Like we didn't even care.
We didn't even pretend to try to get up.
Soon.
We even was like, why are you getting up?
Soon, your job is to shoot this. You're the video person. That's your job. Your job is not to clean up anything after me. That is my responsibility. Even if I choose not to. Accept it. Thank you so much though. Yeah. Suen would make a great boyfriend.
Yes. If anyone's listening.
What a considerate man.
Yeah. He's dying right now.
You're awesome, Suen.
Suen, oh my god.
You're so awesome and available.
Suen did the most endearing thing. The moment he came into the elevator when I let him into this building, he just looks at me. He goes, huh? And he points at his eye. And I just stared at him like, what?
Why? Because you have glasses?
And no, his eye. He was like, huh? Like the way someone's like, notice anything different.
Oh, let me see, Suen.
And I…
what? 쌍꺼풀?
So he was bragging to me about how he rubbed his eyes…
The double eyelid?
He rubbed his eyes so hard this morning that he got a double eyelid on his right eye.
Oh, yo. That happens to me sometimes too.
Same.
If I sleep a lot, I'll wake up with double eyelids on both sides.
Yeah.
Like perfect as if I got surgery. And…
You're like a doll.
Yeah. And people will be like… Huh?
Some people I do not think should have that.
Yeah.
I'm one of them.
You know, I'm perfectly… I have the inner double eyelids where like if I look down like this. I have it.
Yeah.
In the inside. And Haru has that too.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I'm fine with this. I look so alert when I have that. Like, I look too alert. I had it once in high school. Like, I woke up one day in high school.
Yeah.
And I had on both sides. And I couldn't get rid of it. And I'm like, oh, no.
Because you get stuck like that for
yeah,
a bit.
I get to class. And my math teacher was like… like, I was in tablet at the time. But yeah. Like, Daniel, you're very attentive today. And I'm just like, I have no choice. I'm like falling asleep here and I have no choice.
No, I imagine you like those like 90s baby dolls with like the giant like fold and like, the giant eyelashes.
I look like an anime character, basically.
You have purple eyeshadow for some reason.
I was…
Anyways. Sorry.
So we're talking about writing, right? And let me first like tell you about like how I became passionate about writing, because that's usually what people… you know, want to know. So I think I started writing… I don't have this fairy tale. I may have said it in that way before, but like if I really think about it, I don't think there's this fairy tale like cliche, like the story of the legend, you know? Like where like…
The last dance.
Where like something happened to me, or like I was really alone and lonely and like desolate, and writing was, you know, a pen and a piece of paper were the only friends I had, or, you know, maybe, but I don't know. I can't remember. I think I just had to write at some point and I realized that I kind of liked it. I think there was an assignment during elementary school. These were my first years in Canada. And I had to write a short story, like a really short, maybe like 2-3 double spaced pages.
Okay.
Right. And, you know, I my first couple years in Vancouver, like I was in the ESL program. You know, I had just gone there from Korean elementary school. So like my English was not up to par. I just wasn't very confident about it. And I had to write a story in English. And I wrote this thing about like the origin of spring. Don't ask me why. I wrote a fairy tale about it. And I remember that the teacher was like, this is remarkably good for a kid that just learned how to write in English at all. And I think that made me feel like kind of happy. And I just started writing whether or not I had an assignment. Like I would just… It became kind of like a hobby. And by like 5th or 6th grade, I was the best writer in school. And that was… And I also simultaneously fell in love with reading, because that's how you get good at writing, right? You read what other people wrote. And I think very early on, like I kind of recognized that I was sort of good at this thing and at expressing myself, and that I wanted to be better. And maybe that this is like my calling. And plus I think it helped that I really hated math. Like, just mathematics, to me, it was something that I feared, because my dad was really good at math, and he was the guy that was looking over my homework and stuff, like checking to see if I did it right and trying to teach me certain things. And my, you know, parents were different back then. Like, they were allowed to hate you. and it always happened when we were studying math. Yeah. And I felt like math was… driving a wedge between, you know, my dad and I. And I felt like math was just a bad thing. Like, I just didn't like it. Like, there were no good feelings connected to that.
You are good at math, though.
Yeah, I had to be.
Yes.
I had to be.
Yes.
Because I didn't want to get, you know…
Yelled at.
I think, like, I thought to myself, hey, I like writing. And if I'm really good at this… I don't have to ever be a math person. And then I just continue to write. I wrote poetry, and then eventually I wrote lyrics. And the thing is, here's the thing, like, I recognized that I liked writing because that was what I was drawn to when I was into these other things that were so much cooler than writing. Like, for example, rap music, right? Like hip hop. My parents didn't want me to listen to it. No parent wanted their kids to listen to it, really. Teachers hated it, especially at that time because it wasn't as prevalent as now. But when I was listening to like hip hop with my friends, like secretly, like in the basement and stuff, I realized that they were drawn to like the whole look, the whole attitude, the cussing, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes like the not okay content. But what I was drawn to was how their work, like using these words to paint a picture, also like the rhyme scheme. Like I was really into some of the creative rappers. I was into like Pharcyde, which was a group that was exceptional. And I was also into like Tribe Called Quest and Nas because he was so lyrical, right? It didn't really matter that I didn't understand the paintings that they were making with the words, but the fact that they could take these words that we all have, like we all have the same words, but the fact that they can take them and create something that paints a picture for me just was amazing. That was what I was drawn to. And then I would realize that like when I'm watching an ad, like a commercial during like cartoons, like commercial breaks, I was more attracted to the copy than what was happening visually.
Okay.
Or the celebrity that was on there. Like
the dialogue?
Or the slogan.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or just that one phrase. And yeah.
I would be like, how did they think of that? You know, Bounty, the paper towel.
And that's how I recognized what my passion would be.
Yeah.
Because I discovered I discovered elements of what I'm passionate about in everything that I enjoyed. So like advertisements, hip hop music. I also got into rock, and I was drawn to the bands that had good lyrics, like Nirvana, Smashing Pumpkins. Like I was attracted to bands or songs that had good lyrics. And then when I got into like the Beatles, you know, I discovered the Beatles because like my sister was listening to it and stuff. I think I was attracted to John Lennon because his lyrics his writing was way more lyrical than Paul McCartney's.
Paul McCartney did really good job with like plain speak, making that
really
poetic.
And just incredible melodies and stuff. But I was more drawn to John Lennon because just what he was doing with the words, like across the universe and stuff like that. So I was into the same things. What I'm trying to say is, it's not like this thing where like, as a kid, you're like, hey, I really like reading and writing. I like poetry. I was into the exact same things that all the other kids were into. Like watching TV, playing video games, you know, like into rap music, like into hip hop, into rock, just the popular music at the time. But what I liked about it was where my passion came out.
Mm.
Like for a video game, I would be more interested in the actual, you know, the sections that people skip.
Oh yeah, the speaking, the dialogue.
Yeah, the speaking and the dialogue. Like I would be into role playing games.
Yeah.
And I would never skip over the sections where the dialogue or the narrative happens.
Yeah, I knew all the backstories to Tekken.
Yeah, and everyone hated that. Yeah. Everyone wanted me to skip. They're like, dude, press B, like skip it. And I'm like, but I'm watching a story. And I was also into films, like heavily into films, more because of the story and the writing. And I just loved how a dialogue works, you know? And I loved when actors would take words and deliver it in a way that was amazing.
Yeah.
Which was why I also was really into Shakespeare for a while.
Yeah.
Okay, which seems ridiculous because Shakespeare is pretty boring, dude. Right? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's
Lion
not,
King did it.
But like, I really got into Shakespeare because just the sheer amount of like wordplay. And
he invented so many words.
Yeah.
He invented the word weird.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He invented
that's
that
pretty
word.
Weird.
Oh.
Thanks, Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was really into Shakespeare where like I would actually go and see the play because I wanted to see how the words were delivered. I saw almost every Shakespearean like adaptation to film because this guy was, well, I don't know if he might have been a group of guys, but I was really just into like these words.
Yeah. So question, when you're writing dialogue in your script or your plays and your books and stuff, but more so I'm talking about performative dialogue. So like in scripts and plays and
or
stuff.
Or my music.
Yeah, but specifically for like acting or whatever. Because Aaron Sorkin, he has this thing where…
Aaron Sorkin is another person that's great with dialogue.
He's like known for dialogue.
Yeah, he's like the master. One of the keys. Oh, really? He's known for dialogue? I didn't know that.
He's known for his dialogue because of… he inserts any pauses and like us. He writes that.
Yeah, because people talk that way.
And he always tells the directors that he works with, I don't appreciate if you let the actors improvise or deliver the words not as I wrote it, even if it gets the point. Because for me, words in a dialogue are notes on a sheet of music. Mm-hmm. If you miss one note, the song's different.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know if you agree with
that as
a writer.
That's the one thing I don't like about Aaron Sorkin.
Yeah.
Like movies or whatever, because I love him, right?
Yeah.
I recognize that he is exceptional at what he does.
Yeah,
and like for example, like The Social Network,
West Wing. Yeah,
Social Network is it's like a play, right? And that's what's good about Aaron Sorkin works. It's like a play, but it's also what I don't like about it.
Mm.
A lot of times I feel like it's sometimes that it's staged or that he's flexing his ability because like you just said, actors can't really improvise it, right? And they're playing literally every note. And because I'm also a musician, sometimes it's good to miss a couple notes. Sometimes it's good to take out whole sections because it makes the song that much more unexpected. And That's also how I feel about Quentin Tarantino. You know, Tarantino is also another person that's really good at the script.
Yes.
But the thing is, I can sometimes see his hand. I can see the writer's hand while I'm watching the movie. Mm. I don't feel like it's two people in a scene or in a car. Like I don't feel like they're really talking. I feel like I can see the writer's hand.
Yes, it's just Tarantino wearing different wigs.
Yeah, and that sometimes like takes me out.
Yes.
I honestly do like improv and I like when I feel like some of the greatest scenes that I've loved in films, when I Google it to get info about it, I realized that it was ad-libbed. And the fact that a lot of the scenes that I like turn out to be ad-libbed scenes means that I'm more drawn to like spontaneous, you know, like something unexpected.
Yes.
Let me just say one thing and then move on.
Uh-huh.
Because I want to talk to you. I want to ask you some stuff too. But what I was trying to get at is a lot of people feel like think that passion or like their calling is something that just like rears its head like in its pure form. You know? You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
And I'm just telling you that it's not like writing or like creative writing or like dramatic writing or whatever,
yeah,
or poetry just popped up in front of me and was like, this, yeah. I'm your calling. I'm saying that I was able to recognize what I like about the same things that I liked as everyone else.
Yes.
And that's how maybe you should try to discover your passion. If you guys are listening right now and you have no idea what you're passionate about, just look at the things that you already like, and they can be as commonplace and cliche as like hell, right? But try to look for what you like about it. And the minute you can figure out what you like about the things that you like, you might be able to see a passion in there somewhere, right? And this is like, for example, like certain musicians, right? They're very good at music, but they're also very well-dressed, which means that they are into fashion. And quite often, they are able to venture into fashion and do really well there too, because they realize that it wasn't just, you know, some clothing. They were into like the design of it, like just the colors.
The package.
And then you realize that, oh wow, I recognize it in their music as well. For example, Pharrell.
Yes.
Like Pharrell, when like right off the bat, when the Neptunes blew up and Pharrell blew up, like he was a fashionista, like from straight on, right? Like with the mesh caps, like baseball caps, and like the cargo shorts, like the skater t-shirt and like the sneakers. He had this aesthetic and it kept evolving. He was like just very well dressed.
Yeah.
And after like, you know, he did BBC, like Billionaire Boys Club. You know, he worked with Bape a lot, like clearly a fashion guy, right? And then you go back to listening to his music and you realize that his beats are different from everyone else's, because it's almost like he has an album called Seeing Sounds, and I can totally see that that's what he does. Like you can see the colors in the music.
Yeah.
And it's some of his songs are made in a way that are akin to like putting on an outfit or an ensemble, or like designing, you know, colors on a shirt or a sneaker.
Yeah.
Right. And that's how you should approach trying to discover your passion. Like if you're into watching a lot of YouTube, look into what you really like about the YouTube things you see, like the channels you see. Like, is it the comedy? Are you looking for all the funny things and everything? Like in your day to day, like are the funny things or like the irony of it or the comedy and everything, like is that what you're drawn to? Maybe you have a passion for funny.
Yeah.
Maybe you have a passion for comedy. And then how you translate that discovery into an actual craft or profession is the next step. But first you need to discover what you like about the things you like.
Yes.
So you studied TV writing?
Yes.
And I assume that's very different from like literature or like…
Yeah, prose.
Yeah.
It's very different. Like the priorities on a script are different. If anything, I think the reason I was drawn towards script writing more than, you know, literature was because felt like I was just lazier. Honestly, it's about efficiency.
I know what
it's about, to paint a picture in the most efficient way as you can, with like, you know, your little style that you have.
Yeah.
Saying the most with the least amount, basically.
Like you can just say transition or cut to.
Yeah.
Instead of, and then the billowing smoke from the, you know.
That was my least favorite about reading older books growing up. Was like the first three pages of every new chapter
was describing the setting,
the sunset.
Yeah.
And on the house. And now in hindsight, I get what that was supposed to do as a device. But in the end, I was just like, I just want to get to the people talking. Like, I want to get to the actual action. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was a great thing about a movie or a show is that you see the setting. Mm-hmm. Move on.
Yeah.
You set the setting in 1 second. Good. We know
like
where we are.
One or two lines is perfectly fine.
Yeah. I just
night. Cut, fade in to night.
Yeah.
Like New York Street.
Yeah.
You know? And then you just move on.
Yeah.
And yeah. I know what you mean.
So I always… in life… And a lot of friends of mine will not like this about me. Which is that in most things… I just like getting to the point.
Ew.
Yeah. I don't like passiveness or passive aggression in any form.
You just like getting to the point.
In every way.
Okay. I can identify with that. Me
so,
too.
Yeah. So I think that's where the preference for script versus like straight up literature.
Okay.
Came
so
from.
Again, you discovered a personality trait.
Yeah.
About you, like something you like, which is you like getting to the point.
Yeah.
And it helped you decide between prose, like, you know, literature, like book writing.
Yeah.
And writing scripts. Yeah, yeah. I see what you mean.
Yes. Yeah,
So you like getting to the point.
I love getting to the point and I knew what I liked right off the bat. I knew what I liked and I'm one of those people who gets really into what they like.
Okay, and what is… What you like? You like comedy? What?
So growing up, for example, one of the earliest memories that had to do with words was actually my dad and I were obsessed with getting Reader Digests. And we would…
Oh, me too.
Yeah. And we would read each other the jokes.
I didn't do that.
It would be like, you know, set up punchline. Mm-hmm. And we would deliver it to each other. We're like, all right, this is a good one.
Okay.
You know? And it was just the act of delivering it to say it in the way that it would be the funniest and being aware of how it sounds. You know,
you had a great relationship with your dad.
But sure.
Okay, never mind.
But that was just like a very specific thing. And I watched a lot of TV. Mm-hmm. I was one of those kids, like a latchkey kid, you know, who gets basically raised by after school TV and stuff.
That's another thing that… Yeah. I can't identify with because I was not allowed to really watch TV for any longer than like 20 minutes. Eventually, yeah. They cut the cord, literally cut the cord.
Yeah.
With scissors.
Yeah.
Which I thought was the dumbest thing you could do because like, why ruin your
TV
to… Why not just tell me not to see it or just force me into the room?
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah. So watching a lot of TV was something you liked.
TV is the reason I was even able to speak any Korean. Because okay. I also watched a lot of Korean TV. Like mm-hmm. children's shows and like the variety shows with my parents and stuff like that. I learned English. Because technically Korean was my first language. So I learned English from TV.
Question. At what point did you decide that you would like… You know, try to go to like… So you went to NYU Tisch.
Yes.
Right? That's going to NYU Tisch is like a is relevant because it's a actual like specific decision you need to make.
Yeah, you have to
that you're gonna go into, you know, something other than like just the normal liberal arts, right?
Yes,
a more specific, it's a more specific decision. And when did you decide that you would want to go into like TV writing? As opposed to the million other things you can possibly try to do at a young age.
Makes sense. Okay. Well, so for the longest time, I was not… As much as I was good at identifying what I liked, I was not good at identifying… I'm very like experience oriented. Like I don't care for being like one thing or doing one thing. I'm very much if the door is open, might as well step through it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think very similar to you, I had certain experiences where there was a common denominator mm-hmm. where what I appreciated about something was the writing and the storytelling of it and just like even liking the thought process behind it because I loved the commentary more than the actual show for like The Simpsons.
Okay.
I would memorize the commentary for Simpsons
like
episodes.
How it was made.
Yeah, the behind the stories and like what motivated jokes and, you know, the day that they delivered the jokes, like how did the room read it and stuff like that. What lasted, what didn't. So I was always fascinated by that. I knew I loved TV and I knew I wanted to be a part of it because I heard
and
about…
And how old were you when this…
Probably the most… It started mostly sixth grade.
Mm-hmm.
Sixth grade I realized I really like specifically TV. Mm-hmm. More than movie, more than books. And I love both. All those things.
Okay. And when did you decide that you might want to make it a profession? Like that you might want to go to a college for that?
Summer of sophomore year. Because my brother forced me to do a summer college program to like, you know, bump up the resume kind of a thing. And he says, I don't care where you go or what you study. I just want you to go. So I'm going to give you the freedom of choice about what you spend the summer studying for 3 weeks.
And you decided.
And I was like, I fucking hate the idea of business.
So you want to try writing.
So the specific school for some reason we chose was Cornell.
Okay.
So I got into the Cornell summer program and I chose…
And you went all the way to Ithaca?
Bruh, I did not realize it was nowhere near
New York
City.
Dude, I went there once to visit my sister.
Horrible. I hate…
God, I love that place for everyone that's living there.
Nah, I hated it. I hated it from the beginning I got there.
Loved Ithaca for everyone that's living there right now.
Nah.
Anyways.
Strongly disagree.
Yeah.
But… So I went to Ithaca. I did 3 weeks intensive program for short
scripts.
Screenplays.
Okay.
Yeah, short scripts. That was my first time ever.
And you loved
writing
it.
A script. I don't know if what I felt was love, but I felt like I want to get this right, and I haven't gotten it right yet.
So you need to get it right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I wasn't getting it right because like I wasn't like you where I immediately got any praise for writing because I didn't. I'm also not competitive.
Hey, don't get me the wrong way. Like, don't get what I said the wrong way. I didn't.
You got really strong positive feedback from an early age about writing.
It wasn't like this kid's a prodigy. Like, it wasn't like, oh my God, you're the best writer ever.
I'm
saying the amount of praise I got was like, you are really good at writing.
Yeah. Okay.
You just learned English, but you're pretty good.
Okay.
And that was enough for me.
Yeah, same.
Is what I'm saying. Don't think that, you know, like I discovered like some immense talent or anything.
Yeah, for me it was never any motivation in the sense that somebody said, you're really good at something, you should do it.
Mm-hmm.
It was very much of like, everyone I admire and the people who make the things I like are good at this.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to get better at this. To experience the same things that I like they experienced. Because I grew up as a latchkey kid, like I said, but as a latchkey kid was like forced to be alone a lot and home a lot.
Yeah.
And constantly feeling like I was missing out on things. So I think like you'll see in my life that I'm very much like, I want to do everything because I felt like I wasn't being allowed or able to do anything for the longest times. And so, the coolest stories I would hear were these like TV writers and being in that room and making something cool. And I just wanted that experience.
Oh, now that I think about it, perhaps that's why I was more into like the literary, like prose writing as opposed to like scripts.
Yeah.
Even though I was really into films. I think it's the fact that my parents didn't let me watch TV. And the only thing I could do while I was completely alone, because I was also alone a lot, was read a book because that was all that was around.
Yeah.
Like they had cut the cord. They didn't like me listening to music, and unless it was classical music, which, you know, how fun is that?
Yeah.
So I had to read a lot, and the books that were at home were like the great books.
Yes.
And of course, I had to discover something in there to pass the time. Like I had to read a Charlotte Bronte book and find something in there that I could bear.
Yes.
And what I realized though is so you mentioned like comedy. I became obsessed with the perfect sentence. And that is an obsession I think I still have. Because at one point when I was younger, like when I was a kid, I got into reading like obituaries.
I was obsessed with reading crime reports in the local newspaper. Okay.
Like obituaries and like what's what's written on people's tombstones.
Oh, like if you only had the one sentence.
Yeah. And it became like… I became interested in writers that were really good with the sentence.
Yeah.
Right? To deliver a perfect sentence. And Shakespeare is one of them. Right? Hemingway. Horrible person. Horrible person. But Hemingway was incredible with the sentence. And so was Fitzgerald. So was everyone that I loved. And as a writer. Eventually, I think that bled into like me becoming a rapper. Because the minute I realized that a rap verse, 16 bars, right, is the traditional rap verse, is 16 opportunities for me to write the perfect sentence. Right? Because that's what rap bars force you to do. Because you're rapping to a beat. You can't just have run-on sentences. Right? And plus, because you're performing this live and the competitive nature of hip-hop itself, like you are already in a genre where you have to deliver something in every bar. And the minute I recognized that, I was like, oh, this is something that I could… like I don't know if I could get good at, but like I could fall in love with.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just fun for me to construct these verses. And even now, I think of my life as… well, anyone's life as like a sentence. At the end of it all, this is what I got from like being into obituaries and tombstones, which is really morbid in a way. But like what I realized early on is that at the end of it all, you get a sentence. Like this vast like amount of experiences you've had and like this huge like multiverse of a life you have. And then eventually at the end of it, you get like one sentence in the paper or one sentence on a stone or on a plaque or whatever.
Yeah.
Right? That realization made me think to myself that like I want to live my life so that I can have I can become the most, you know, the best sentence possible or like the most perfect sentence possible. So basically, you know, I've been working on that sentence. Like that's what my life is. I'm changing out words every year. You know, sometimes just scratching it all out and making a new sentence. And as my personality changes or as circumstances change or my values change, that sentence gets developed and developed until eventually I'm going to have to leave with one sentence. And I want it to be a great one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of like what drives me. And that's why I do love dialogue in TV and film.
Mm.
Because of the time constraint, right? People don't have the attention span to listen to some guy deliver like an entire soliloquy, right? Like you got to deliver something in like a couple sentences in a dialogue.
Like what you want.
Yeah.
And how you're going to get
it. Yeah. And Aaron Sorkin is the master of that. Where like he'll have two lines of dialogue that also sets up the setting, sets up the time, sets up the stakes involved. Sets up a larger meaning within a very short time frame.
Yes.
A good example of that, of great writing, is the Steve Jobs movie that Aaron Sorkin wrote.
Yeah.
I don't know if any of you guys have seen it. I feel like it was very, very underrated in the box office. Because it's an exceptional film.
Yeah.
The fact that he decided, okay, to show Steve Jobs' life, right? And this is a very like nerdy like writing kind of thing. But
this whole episode is.
There are many ways to show Steve Jobs' life because it's extravagant.
Yeah.
It's extraordinary, right? And usually people start with like how he was a high school dropout or maybe how he was adopted.
Yeah.
And then, you know, chronologically show what happens. But what Sorkin did was he decided to focus on three launch dates of iconic Apple products and just showed the couple hours before and after the launch, or like the 30 minutes leading up to the launch. And he confined himself to those three times and spaces and was somehow able to deliver not only Steve Jobs' life, but like some of the, you know, some of the motives or things behind his shortcomings and also like his successes and also his relationship with his daughter, his evolution.
Yeah.
And the fact that he was able to do that with those three, just three set pieces is he was able to fit a lot into dialogue.
Yeah.
Right? Into a few perfect sentences, basically. And when someone does that, to me, it's like someone levitating. Or to me, it's like someone doing like an incredible slam dunk. Or like, you know, or Kendrick Lamar, like, just going off on the beat and just like delivering like 50 bars without like breathing.
You know what Aaron Sorkin did? He got to the point.
Yeah.
He got to 3 points.
Exactly. He got to three.
He got to three major points that matter the most.
Yeah. And he just got rid of everything else. He got rid of like all the, you know, Victorian age, like setting up like the sunset for like 15
going
pages.
Going through like East of Eden, John Steinbeck, like four generations of the family.
And then describing what a fucking horse looks like for like 2 pages, which I can't. Like I said before, I can't. I don't have the attention span or like I can't stomach you talking about a horse for 2 pages. And then it makes me also question like why is this person like so obsessed with horses?
The horse, yeah.
Because this is like really descriptive, like telling me about his legs and stuff. I'm like, how is this important to the story? Damn it. Like this person, you know, this is a weird novel. Like I'm not down with this.
Secretariat.
But anyways, like, oh, another thing that people really want to know is how to get good at writing is a question I get a lot.
I would like to.
And it's impossible to answer.
Yeah.
It's really impossible to answer. Do you subscribe to this 10,000 hour thing?
I know
the Malcolm Gladwell, is it? Like the Outliers?
I don't know about that exact number, but I think it's kind of like
the
even
idea.
I do think that there is good in just doing it. I think that's basically a weird way of saying that. I feel like it's a weird way of saying basically like just do it then. Just write it.
Mm-hmm.
Write something.
Mm-hmm.
And something will come out of it. I know a lot of writers that I do admire, they say that like it took them a while to get to that point, but they realize they only benefited from just like, even if it was just the act of sitting in the chair with like the blank screen in front of them and nothing gets done, was doing more than just dancing around it.
One thing for sure though, if what you want is to be a writer more than to actually write, you got to just get out of here.
Isn't that what you said you were trying to do in college for a minute?
Well, no. I think I said that like there were kids that were like that.
Oh, yeah.
And what I mean by that is like if you want to like be that whole like be a writer and like that whole look and that whole like, you know, you just want to be one. As opposed to like actually enjoying the writing.
Or even having something to say.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
That's my biggest thing.
Yeah, I'm just saying maybe it's not for you.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, that's a good point.
What?
Yeah.
Having something to say.
You have to have something to say. Right? And usually extraordinary writers are extraordinary at living. And by that, I don't mean like having, you know, mad successful stories or, you know, being happy as hell and like living their best life or whatever. I mean like good or bad, you know, ecstasy or pain, like people who have lived extraordinary lives usually write really well because they have something to say.
Yeah.
They have something to vent. They have something to air out. They have something to argue against, argue for. And if you don't have that, you need to work on living a lot more than your writing.
Yes.
Is what I would say. Because it is impossible to be a good writer without having something to say. It is impossible.
Yes.
And a lot of people I've seen have attempted to be great writers without having something to say. And I'm saying that is not possible because, yeah, you could be extremely, you know, skilled with words. You could be adept at like painting a picture with words. But if the picture is nothing I can recognize or nothing that speaks to me or anything that matters really, it's nothing. It's just wallpaper.
Yeah. I remember thinking I might have an affinity for getting words across because one, that like the way you're very concerned, hyper concerned about like that perfect sentence.
Yeah.
For me, I've always been hyper concerned about are people going to get what I'm trying to say? Mm-hmm. And how do I keep rephrasing it until it's exactly what I want to say? Mm-hmm. And the chances of them misinterpreting it is less and less.
Mm-hmm. Like someone recently said to me that it is weird that you text as if you're writing, like you text like a writer. Someone said this to me.
Okay.
Like your texts are like you have good sentences, which is really weird, and punctuation, which
you do a lot of like proper grammar in your texts.
Yeah, and it's just a habit.
Yeah,
it's not because I'm a grammar freak. I really don't care. I think it's like a habit, kind of. And like you have to have something to say. That's the only advice I can give. Like, I don't know how one goes from being a non-writer to an exceptional writer in any other way. You know Pete Davidson?
Yes, I do.
Of course you know. Do you like him? Because I like him.
I like him a lot. I've seen him perform before.
Okay. I really like Pete Davidson. I know there are people that don't, but I don't care. Like,
yeah, same.
Yeah, that's your opinion. Whatever. But he's got a movie coming out called The King of Staten Island.
Judd Apatow produced. Yeah.
It's basically about his life, but not really.
Like every Judd Apatow movie.
And you know how the dude like he lost his father during 9/11. You know, like his dad was a fireman, and he went through, you know, like, just a lot of highly publicized, you know, things.
Yeah.
And he's not been well. But like, he says he's getting better. And when I see his like comedy sets or even when he's doing like the SNL stuff, he's different from the other people that are doing it. Other people are doing it really well.
Yeah.
They are in the character. They pull it off so well. They're like professionals. But this guy is not a professional. Like, I see him in the scene and I still see Pete Davidson. Do you see what I mean? Like, all the, like in a very funny skit on SNL, all the other characters, all the other actors are, they're exceptional at what they do, right? They're very funny and they're in character. And I can see that they're playing the character. And Pete Davidson will be there. And he's also playing a character. But I can still see Pete Davidson. And some might say that that's highly unprofessional. Right? And also he's got like some beef with like SNL. Like he doesn't get along with the… You know, he doesn't feel like he's a part
of
their thing. And I can see it. But the thing is like when he's doing his stand-up… Or when like I see him in interviews where he's very… And he's a very candid person, right? I see him talking… I can see that this guy has like done a lot of living.
Oh yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The ups and downs and like the ugly side of it all. Like he's done a lot of living and feeling and hurting. And because of that, anything he writes is going to be good.
Yeah.
Like, I guarantee you, it's going to be good. And is he technically as good a writer as some other comics or like, you know, Aaron Sorkin, for example?
Like being super polished and like knowing exactly probably the right
not.
Thing to
yeah.
say.
Probably yeah. not as good of a like technical writer as some like, you know, lit profs at, you know, Stanford or like Harvard or something. Yeah. Right? But I guarantee you he will be the he will write the better thing. And I think it's because of, you know, what we've been talking about. Like, you know what's remarkable? I have now done this done writing for so long that I can read a verse from a rapper and know what this rapper has been spending the last few months or half a year doing. Like what he's been interested in.
Yeah.
What he has either been doing or not doing.
Yeah.
Does that even make sense? Okay.
No, I do know.
So this is something that actually happened. But Mithra wrote a verse. Okay. And I saw it and I, you know, I didn't like it, honestly. And I told him, I don't think this is the verse that that is required for this song. Have you been spending the last few months watching Netflix, you know, just chilling, camping, or, you know, I said this, right? Yeah. I said a couple things. And literally, those are the things that he was doing.
Oh.
Those were the only things he was doing for the last few months.
Yeah.
And I told him, you need to get off of that. And you need to, I need you to take a couple months and meet people and experience different things. And the fact that I was able to pick out how he had been living, because I was able to do this because some of the like similes or like, you know, like, some of the ways he was describing certain things, and the metaphors that he was using, I could tell that that's where his brain was stuck at.
Mm.
It was in a very small space.
Yeah,
and everything he was looking at, within those couple months, was the only way he could describe certain things.
Yeah.
And after I said that, he came up with another verse that was significantly better. Because I think, not that he went out and decided to have, you know,
like a crazy
different
life.
Experiences,
yeah.
But I'm saying he realized that your life really does come through in your writing. And either he decided to, you know, sort of step out of the box or was forced out of the box because of what I said. Isn't that crazy? Isn't that crazy that I was able to read something that someone wrote and realize how they had been spending their time?
I mean, I think even that about tweets.
Even though the lyrics had nothing to do with that, you know, it was a love song.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
It had nothing to do with him talking about himself.
Yeah.
But the metaphors he was using, the specific words he was using, I was like, did you watch this one TV show on Netflix?
Yeah.
And, you know, did you spend a lot of time just camping and stuff?
Mm.
Because every nature reference… Or every reference.
Love is like me chilling on a beanbag.
No, but it wasn't even that specific.
Yeah, yeah.
But like you know, like mountains and stuff like that. Like I can just see
I get what you're saying.
Where he's drawing this from.
Yes.
And he's not drawing this from something that is a real emotion. Right? I could tell that he was drawing this from things that he had seen or just happened to be a part of, as opposed to something that he has felt that he has felt or that has affected him.
Is it like Anchorman, basically, where he's like, I love lamp? Because it's literally like you're like just looking around the room and you're like, oh, glass man.
and you know, he doesn't do this all the time. But at that, with that particular song, it happened.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, I do feel like if you guys need advice to become a better writer, there's, because Mithra is a good writer. You know, it's just that at the time, he wasn't, he was doing a very small amount of living.
Yeah.
Right? A small space of living.
Yeah.
And because of that, it affected his writing. And I don't really have that problem.
Yeah, because shit just happens to you.
Yeah, because just a lot of shit happens to me, like constantly.
Yeah.
And I hate it. If I wasn't, if I didn't have this job,
yeah.
If I wasn't a writer, if I wasn't a rapper, like if I didn't have, if I wasn't whatever, like an entertainer or a performer or whatever, I would hate my life.
Yeah.
Because I can't deal with this.
You wouldn't be able to process everything.
Yeah, you guys don't, like, you guys listening right now, or like, even if you're like up to date with my social media or whatever, like, you don't know, like, you know, 5% of the stuff I have to deal with on a daily basis. I don't know how this much amount of shit happens to me. I don't. And I hate it. It really gets in the way of me trying to be happy. And it really gets in the way of me trying to stay happy for my family and for my daughter, right? But because I'm a writer, I, in a strange, perverted way, it's like it's a blessing, in a weird way, because I literally never run out of having something to say, and that's usually the difference between the writers, you know, like I'm sure there are people that are technically better at writing than I am. But sometimes in the same room, we could write and I just simply have something more to say.
Yeah, we're very opinionated.
Yeah, and that that is enough to give me some kind of edge.
Yeah.
Because if you have something to say, there's… Because everybody has something to say, really. They just don't know how.
Yeah.
Right? And that's why people are drawn to films, music, like they're drawn to rap verses, they're drawn to like good TV shows, they're drawn to cartoons, they're drawn to The Simpsons, they're drawn to like whatever, because they also have something to say. They don't fucking know how.
Yeah.
And someone does it for them. When they feel like someone has said something that they can't say,
yeah,
that they didn't even know they wanted to say. It's like that is,
there's a lot of relief.
Yeah. That is the moment that art becomes art.
Mm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And for that reason, you have to constantly explore what it is you want to say and also what other people want to say too. You have to be very observant. I don't mean like go to every single party and go be socialize like crazy.
Yeah.
That's not what I mean. Like, but you have to be interested in the inner lives of other people. What you imagine it to be. Also, just that's why reading is important, because you literally get to peek inside how other people think and what other people are like feeling. And if you don't realize that, if you're not interested in other people's stories and like the struggles that they are going through, that's probably why you don't have a story.
Yeah.
That's also probably why you have nothing to say.
Probably you lack empathy.
Yeah. That's, I don't know. That's the only advice I could possibly give.
Yeah. I think that's solid. I think that's a good foundation, and it'll just naturally lead itself towards the right kind of inspiration or motivation, probably.
Yeah. And let me tell you, like, being a writer is probably not the most, like, it's not the greatest job in the world.
Yeah. You guys see my Twitter? I'm suffering.
It's not easy. Like it's
yeah.
Do you believe in writer's block?
Yeah, and I'm usually the block.
Okay. Well,
I'm the block.
I don't believe in writer's block.
Yeah.
There's something that I always say whenever like anyone asks me about writer's block, like because I get asked that in interviews a lot. Like I don't know why, but they're like, do you ever like deal with writer's block? And here's the thing. It is much harder for me to deal with not being able to say something or write something.
Well, to me, that's writer's block.
Okay.
Not knowing how to say what you want to say.
No, that's
so
not
it's
what
hard.
I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
If I was forced into a position where I wasn't able to write something
yeah.
or say something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or let's say like I'm on family vacation and I'm not allowed to work on anything for like a week.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Like my wife says, no writing, no pen and pad, no memo
app. I don't even
app.
Want to hear you hum a melody.
Yeah, for a week. Not being able to do that will drive me way crazier than being in front of the computer and not having something to write.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
So not being able to write is what drives me insane. Not sitting there and, you know…
Trying to come up
with something.
Yes.
So that's why writer's block is impossible for me. Because if I'm sitting in front of a computer and it's not coming out. Like I've spent 30 minutes like on one or two words and I just can't continue to write these bars. Yeah, that's painful. But my only other option is to not write. To turn off the computer and like not write.
Mm-hmm.
Which is worse for me.
Yeah.
So… In a weird way, it's impossible for me to ever have writer's block. Which sucks sometimes. Right? And a lot of people are like… You know, like how do you overcome writer's block? How do you deal with writer's block? I don't know how to answer that. Because the only way I can overcome the pain of having writer's block… is having a bigger pain, like a far greater pain,
yeah,
of not being able to continue.
Yes,
which just makes no sense, but it does. If
yeah,
really,
it makes sense
if you really think about it and try
for once.
Yeah, if you try,
use that freaking peanut brain and make it work. Turn it into butter.
Why are you doing that, Diane?
I don't know.
Would you recommend to like young, really young kids to pursue a life in writing?
I mean, that's what they want to do. I mean, there's a billion ways to write.
I would recommend TV writing.
Yeah?
Or film
it's
writing.
It's more job stability, I'll say that.
Yeah, I would recommend…
It's less one-offs. You actually get hired to staff.
I would recommend logistically. TV writing or…
I like watching something grow. That's what it is.
Yeah.
I like staying on something and seeing how it changes in Morris instead of like a one-off and walking away from it. Like movies and stuff.
Like I wouldn't recommend becoming a novelist unless that is something that you are like you really want to do.
Yeah, that's like, hard.
And I'm telling you, you have to really want to do it.
Yeah.
Because I tried finishing my my great novel all throughout high school, college. And even after college. So I have a collection of short stories. But I've never put out a novel. And of course… Being like the literature kid… I wanted to make my great American novel or whatever. And I almost drove myself insane. And it never materialized. Because… I could technically spend the remainder of my life trying to finish that. And it's incredible that some novelists are able to do that.
Multiple books.
Yeah. Like Stephen King. What the fuck, dude?
What the fuck, Stephen?
How many of you are there?
Step
because
the fuck up, Stephen.
How are you doing that?
And how does he just like stay focused on that singular story for so long?
Yeah. Like at one, times have changed. You don't want to you're not tired. Yeah. Like you don't want to just make an audiobook here. Well, we talked a lot about writing today. I don't think I've ever talked about writing so much in my entire life.
Like Philly Fest.
Oh my God, how fun was this?
It's so
well,
fun.
I'm wondering if, you know, we answered any of your questions. Like, you know, even if you don't become a writer, writing is so fundamental now. Especially even like actually because of smartphones. Everyone's a writer now, right?
Everyone's a thought piece, yeah.
Yeah. And everyone's a critic. Everyone's a reviewer. Everyone knows the truth. And it's maybe the people who really have something important to say now has to cut through the noise, right? So they're gonna be forced to be even better writers.
Yeah, and being a good like reader goes hand in hand with being a good writer.
Yeah,
like reading to this day, I just wish everyone's reading comprehension levels would just go up.
Dude, let me recommend.
It would change life.
Let me recommend a book that's like coming straight out of left field. Since we're talking about writing.
Yeah, the Bible. Just kidding.
No. Diane, you're awesome. 50 Cent.
Oh?
Put out a self-help book called Hustle Harder.
I have to read that. I have to read that.
Oh, dude. Don't read it. Get the audiobook.
Oh, he reads it?
He reads it.
Yeah.
And I was never a big fan of 50 Cent even when he was doing music.
Yeah.
Right? This is just not my style. But this book is amazing. It's especially in audiobook. This is the first audiobook in my entire life.
I don't listen to audiobooks either.
I have never ever bought the audio version of a book. Right?
Yeah.
But I went into… I heard about this book and… It's 50 Cent giving like, you know, life advice and like business advice, but with really concrete details, like episodes from his life, right? And 50 Cent is… Curtis Jackson is obviously going to have a different perspective to things like working with your team, building the right team, you know, knowing your value. You know, 50 Cent is going to have a very different perspective. And yeah. I wanted to hear his perspective. I go in to get the book. And, you know, I'm about to get the book. But right under it is the audio version of the book. And I'm like, if he did the audio book, it's 50 Cent. So I go in and he did the audio. So I'm like, oh shit. For the first time in my life, I'm going to get an audio book. And I got it. And I listened to it like right before I go to sleep. Check it out. Like, obviously 50 Cent did not pay me to talk about this.
Yeah. He paid you 50 cents. Bad joke. It's an obvious joke.
That's so horrible.
I'm so sorry. Haru's here, by the way.
Oh, okay. Anyways, check out that book. Bye, guys. See you next week.
All that lead up to just recommend 50 cents on your book. Not even…
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.